This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. And it is October 11th, 2017. Welcome to Bicycle Talk this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Holla.
Holla. Very good. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please call or text 860-486-9487, or you can email directly to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute or to be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Okay, so I got a few things to hit right away, and I am going to save the rant for after the fact of the actually on the positive side. And I'm going to start. So I'm going to start out this week with on the positive side, and on the positive side is going to be something that's near and dear and personal and close to me, and that is the Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross Race, which was this past weekend. And the Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross Race, I think, was a very positive experience. I got a lot of very solid comments about it, including one particular gentleman who said in a statement to, and this is a shout out to Mike Sear, who has been very involved with the course management and development of the course and constant changing of the course over the years. He said it was the best cyclocross race that you could do short of buying a ticket and going to Europe. So that's a big shout out for the quality of the race and the consistency of the level of the race too. So that's a really cool thing. But what I really want to do a positive side on is people who volunteer at bicycle events. I could never have put a race like this on without all the people that come together and make things happen. There's so much work to do. A big shout out here to the Yukon Cycling Club and also the Yukon Triathlon Club, who both came and helped me out with the race. The day before the race, the Yukon Cycling Club was there. They were also there the day of the race, and we will have them on the air here very soon. So that's kind of cool because we're sitting here right in the middle of the University of Connecticut campus. So it's a perfect opportunity to bring them on the air, and they're very excited about doing that. And then the Yukon Triathlon Club sent some people down on Saturday, and they helped us with breaking down the course, and they were unbelievable, just like workhorses, very, very diligent, very, very positive. I hope they had a good time. We worked them hard, but they were just wonderful. Along with members of the Thread City Cyclers who helped out, along with members of Bike Mansfield that helped out, along with members of the Friends of Mansfield Hollow State Park, for whom the race was actually done, and also it was basically the main event sponsor of the event. So people who help out at and help out and volunteer at bicycle events or any other events in their community, that's a big shout out, a big on the positive side. We love you. We love you dearly. It's a great thing.
Aw, thanks.
Aw, thanks. Oh, yes. And let us not forget the, this is a very important one now. Let us not forget the podium girl extraordinaire, who is sitting here across from me and is my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
I'm so lovely.
You are lovely.
Yeah.
Fran handed out the prizes. And
so did Cindy.
And so did Cindy, yeah. And they got up there, and they when people would get on the podium, you know, the first, second, and third thing where you have the different levels and all,
yep.
They would give them little hugs and kisses and hand them their prizes. And it was very touching.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Well, that was to give it a Euro feel, too, because we kissed them on both cheeks.
Exactly. And yeah. And that's the idea, is we're trying to give it a Euro feel. Without being in Belgium, we'll make it, you know, at least come close. It's the best
yeah.
we can do. So, and of course, in Belgium, they usually have deep, thick mud, you know, because
yeah.
it's a very wet area. And so they are famous for cyclocross. That's their big sport there.
People really got dirty at our race.
They did, but they usually got dirty because it was so dusty and they were sweating so much that they then turned themselves into mud.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of work to do one of those races. Really, really hard. So anyway, if you are ever considering racing a bicycle, if you're thinking, you know what, I think I would like to try racing a bike, try cyclocross first. Because cyclocross is going to teach you, first of all, it's a short race. It's not, it's usually under an hour. So it's very well contained under an hour. So you're only going to be going super hard for that amount of time. Secondly, it teaches you how to handle your bike in adverse conditions and situations. So you become a much, much better bike handler when you race cyclocross. Then if you should proceed onto the road, then you will find that you have skills that you would not be able to master on the road over time. It would take a lot longer, basically. And if you decide that you want to race a mountain bicycle, once you've done it on skinny tires, fat tires are easy. So it's, you know, it's just a great sport. I have had a passion for it over the years. And again, a big shout out to the people who volunteered and helped. They were wonderful and couldn't do it without you. So it was a very successful event. All right. Now we have to go to the infamous Ron's Rant of the Week. So always looking for material, never having to look very far. We're going to go at it again. And we are going to, my Rant of the Week is going to be on a gentleman by the name of Claude Donald Watson. Okay, Claude Donald Watson. Lovely man. Just an incredibly lovely man. He was down in Asheville, is that North Carolina? Asheville?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. He was down in Asheville, North Carolina. And if you go to my Bicycle Talk Facebook page, you'll be able to see a piece of this little video that's there. But good old Claude was driving a, guess what? What kind of vehicle was he driving, Fran? Just a wild guess.
Well, it would either be a pickup truck or an SUV.
It was a pickup truck, right. Right. So it was definitely a truck-like vehicle because it was a truck. And so he was an irate driver. He assaulted an Asheville cyclist last month. He was caught on camera by another motorist. The video has been widely shared around social media over the past week, illustrating once again the all too human dangers that cyclists face on the road. So here it is. I'll give you an explanation of what the video is, because we're not watching videos. We're listening to the radio right now. We're listening to a podcast. So I'll tell you exactly what happened. There was apparently some sort of a construction site, and this particular gentleman felt that the bicycle was, I say gentleman loosely, was the bicyclist was in his way. And so once he came around the cyclist, he got out of his truck because everybody was stopped anyway. He got out of his truck and he marched back and he punched the cyclist in the face twice. The cyclist had the wherewithal, after standing there and taking a couple of hard hits, to pull out his cell phone. Love cell phones, by the way. Love them, love them. This is a beautiful thing. Cyclist's best weapon. And he went right over to the truck and he took a picture of the license plate. In the process of all this, the reason we can see it all is because a vehicle behind him had a cam on their dashboard. I believe it was a truck driver, had a cam on the dashboard and recorded the entire thing and then pulled over and told the cyclist, I recorded it all on a dash cam. So this guy got himself in a little bit of trouble for being, you know, a road raging fool. And so on it went. And I believe he got charges. He got charges against him. And, you know, it was just, why do people have to be so impatient?
Well, that guy, it's really kind of sad because if you look at the photo of him, he does not look like a happy guy.
No, he's not
Poor
a happy guy. Obviously, he's not a happy
what
guy.
A shame.
Why else would you do something like this if
yeah.
you but that you are unhappy with something? Something in your life is triggering you to be this way, and so therefore you're going to take it out on the person on the bicycle because you can't wait 10 seconds to get around someone.
No, it doesn't excuse what he did. But I feel really bad for him because he lost it and he did that. And it was a really awful thing to do.
Well, people lose it. They do this. People do this. And so, you know, what do you do with this? You have to, you have to learn how to handle an angry driver. And there's, you know, there's information out there, which we will discuss and we will get into and talk more about it. But I think today's topic is going to be, we're going to talk a little bit more about road rage.
This is incredible. I have the video on my phone.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
The video is incredible.
Yeah,
this guy really
walks over to this poor guy on a bike and he's...
Right. And the guy on the bike is actually off of his bicycle at this point. And the pickup truck driver comes over and he punches him in the face a couple of times.
So what you're seeing, you're seeing the dash cam. That when you see him actually being punched, it's the dash cam from the police car behind. The guy did it in front of a police car.
Right.
So the dash cam took the footage.
It wasn't in front of it. It was actually a truck driver with a dash cam. Is what it said. So, just really silly. Silly, stupid thing to do, obviously not thinking clearly, obviously getting themselves in enough trouble so that he has a court date. And there's a decision with the man's lawyer who is riding the bike, does not wish to be identified because he's worried about, future rage against him. And, he was just out on a training ride. So he really doesn't want to get his information out there at this time. But there was a commercial driver with a dash cam running right behind who caught most of the incident. And one witness actually recognizing the driver. So this lovely gentleman, Claude Watson, was later arrested and charged with simple assault and reckless driving to endanger two misdemeanors. Misdemeanors. Got that? Misdemeanor. If this person who was riding the bicycle had been in a car, would he have done that? Probably not. But because you're on a bicycle and you're quote-unquote vulnerable and an easy target, people who get ragey like this feel that they can go out and just do whatever they want. And that's just really a shame.
Well, you're considered to be in the way. The attitude is that cars or bicycles are in the way. They shouldn't be. You hear this a lot. You shouldn't be on the road. And that statement, you shouldn't be on the road, is wrong, because if we shouldn't be on the road, we would be legislated off the road.
Right.
Not only are we not legislated on the road, vehicles. Motor vehicles are legislated to. Motor vehicles are legislated on how to behave around us. You're supposed to stay 3 feet away from us.
Well, we are a vehicle. We are a moving vehicle.
And we're allowed to be on the roads. We're very much allowed to be on the roads.
Yes, we are. And yes, we do pay taxes.
I know, right?
For that silly argument. But anyway, it's really unfortunate because this man, Claude, is going to have a problem now and he's going to have to deal with it. And the fact that it's a misdemeanor is a little bit concerning to me that he has to deal with that. But he may get a civil suit against him, too, because that's one of these things that's going to emerge from this, is that if he did physical damage to this person, if he had an assault against this person has a very good chance of suing him for the physical assault. So his problems are just to begin for his rage. So... hide your rage. Your rage is not, you need to learn how to calm that down. And remember that people that are on bicycles are just people. We're just people. We're trying to get from point A to point B, just like everybody else is. And then the other thing that gets me is that when I have a person driving a car or a truck, and someone who drives a car and truck just called us by the looks of the response from the phone on the other side of my mic here. But anyway, when they call, this is a classic that they do, and they want to talk to you. They want to tell you how you're supposed to ride your bike on the road. If you are driving a motorized vehicle, a car or a truck, you do not have the responsibility of telling someone who is riding a bicycle how to ride. That is not your responsibility, and it is not in your interest to instruct them as to how to do it. The rules of the road are obvious. The rules of the road are the same as they are with a car or a truck. So when someone pulls up alongside of me and they tell me, you should get over to the right as far as possible, well, that's not exactly true. And we were having this discussion this morning in a spin class. I was talking to some people this morning after spin class. We were talking about this. And it's, you know, when someone gets ragey like this and starts telling you what you should be doing and how you should be riding your bike and how you should behave when you're on the road, it's not their responsibility to do it. So what I always tell them is, I tell them, why don't you just pull over up here and let's talk about bicycle law? Let's have a nice, pleasant conversation about bicycle law.
They're usually too angry.
And they're usually too angry and they usually drive off. But, you know, as a cyclist and all of us out there that are listening to Bicycle Talk or involved in cycling and advocacy or just, you know, you ride your bike back and forth to work, whatever you do, you ride your bike, okay? Know your laws, know your bike laws, and be calm about it. And be direct about it and teach the people who are angry with you what the proper way is. So you had a phone call, Fran.
Yes, a gentleman named Bill, who would not reveal the town he was from, just wanted me to know that us cyclists would do better if we would just ride single file. And that was his opinion.
Well, it's his opinion, but it's not the law.
Right.
So, you know, his opinion is well heard, and I appreciate that. And there are certain places and situations I will agree that single file is probably a much safer way to do it. But if I'm going to ride single file, I may also be riding further out into the road than he is happy about. But that is my right to do that. And actually, if you take a look at the bicycle groups like League of American Bicyclists, their instruction to you as a cyclist is to ride a little further out in the road than to ride as far to the right as possible, because therefore it'll make the person who is driving the motorized vehicle have to actually pay attention enough to come out and around you and back in, and it's safer for both of you. And, you know, this is not rocket science. This is something that is... this is studied, and it is traffic law, and it's unfortunate that people feel this way, but you know,
but the thing is the law in Connecticut two abreast if it's safe, or is it two abreast all the time? I mean, because if there's a bunch of cars that want to pass you, we call out car back and we go single file.
We do. To the best of my knowledge, and someone can fact check me on this if you wish, but I believe that you can ride two abreast in the state of Connecticut as long as there is 200 yards of distance to the front and to the back of you. So there's plenty of visual space back and forth, and you can ride two abreast. Now, riding two abreast, let's talk about that a little bit, because riding two abreast is a skill, and it is... when I talk about riding two abreast, I'm talking about you really should be riding as close to one another as you possibly can. If you're riding two abreast and one of you is on the center line and the other one is on the white line, that's really not a smart move or a good idea.
Connecticut state law allows cyclists to ride two abreast. So the thing is, then that if a car is coming behind us and we yell car back and we get single file, that's a courtesy, isn't it?
It is a courtesy on our part.
It's not, but
it's
we
not
don't
a
have
requirement.
To. No,
it's not
right.
A requirement. Right, that's correct.
So mind you, we ride on a lot of narrow roads. If I'm riding two abreast and I'm chatting with my friend and I hear a car coming up behind me, I am going to call car back and I am going to get single file out of respect for the car that's behind me, because I do want you to get around me. I don't want you to be frustrated behind me. And then I want you to pass me and I want you to wave to me and say hello and have a great day. And I hope you'll go home and get on your bike. That's what we would love to have happen. For you to get angry and lean on your horn when we're two abreast, first of all, if you come too close to us and you lean on your horn, you're going to startle us and you could cause an accident.
Right.
If you startle me, I'm on a balancing machine. I could fall off my bike. So please don't come up behind me and lean on your horn.
No.
And don't come to me and scream at me and yell at me and give me the finger. Don't do that to me.
No.
Because...
No.
everybody loses when you do that, because everybody goes home unhappy and upset. And you as well. I mean, you get to vent some frustration, and then you get to go home and tell somebody how you told off that person on a bicycle, or you just told off the bicycle. When you do that, you're clearly showing off how well you can dehumanize another person, and you're dehumanizing yourself while you do it.
Yeah.
If you're frustrated and you need to be somewhere, it's a good idea to take a look at that, slow down, take a breath, and I mean, if that
leave
person...
Leave 5 minutes earlier.
Leave five, or whatever,
whatever.
Or just realize that you didn't. But why do you have to take it out on another person who's just out for exercise, improving their health...
Or transportation.
Getting from here to there. That's right. You don't know what that person's situation is.
The key point here is a lot of people are using their bicycles for transportation.
That's right.
And this is the way that they get back and forth to work. To maybe be the person behind the Starbucks counter that is giving you your fresh coffee in the morning.
Right.
Who knows? It may be the person who's in the ER, who's taking care of you when you run in there with an emergency situation. You know, you don't know who it is who is riding their bicycle back and forth to work. It may be the attorney that you're dealing with who is an avid cyclist. And, you know, we know someone who's an avid triathlete, and she rides her bicycle back and forth to work a lot.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So you have to understand that it's not just people that are desperate, quote unquote, that are riding their bicycles. A lot of people ride their bicycles back and forth to work, and they're on the road. So, you know, let's look at this. It might be a police officer. It might be a judge. You know, these are strong possibilities.
It could be absolutely anybody.
Could be absolutely anyone.
And it could be someone who's grieving. It could be someone who just lost a loved one. It could be someone who's there to blow off steam because they're very, very upset. You're sitting there very upset on your way somewhere, but maybe that person is trying to blow off steam, and instead of having to take a drug for an antidepressant, they're riding their bicycle. Maybe this person had a heart attack and they're helping to prevent another heart attack, and their chosen form of exercise is cycling. I mean, you just don't know. I mean, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to humanize the people who are on the bicycle.
Absolutely. And something that needs to be brought to attention here is when you get behind the wheel of a motorized vehicle, okay, when you get behind the steering wheel of a motorized vehicle, you are accepting an incredible level of responsibility. And, you know, not only to people who are pedestrians or cyclists that are out on the road, but also to other people that are driving motorized vehicles. There's a lot of responsibility there. And I think we've forgotten about that. I think we've forgotten about it because our vehicles are now, quote unquote, safer than they used to be. They're way quieter than they used to be. So people tend to drive them much faster than they used to. And they're, you know, if all of a sudden you're in a panic situation, you can slam on the brakes in a motorized vehicle and you can come to an extremely safe, quick stop, which isn't always so safe about for the person behind you. But it's still the cars are designed with safety in mind, but they're not designed with the safety of a pedestrian or a cyclist in mind. So, you know, you take a lot of responsibility when you get behind the wheel of a car or truck, or as I like to call them, TLVs, truck-like vehicles, which is another issue itself. So, you know, bike rage is such a big deal that there's a Wikipedia page on it. Did you know that?
So not just of road rage, but bike rage.
No, bike rage refers
My
to the act
goodness.
Of verbal or gestural anger or physical aggression between cyclists and other users of bike paths or roadways, including pedestrians, other cyclists, motorcyclists, or drivers. Bike rage can consist of shouting at other road users.
So is this rage by a cyclist?
I'm not there yet. I'm not there. Give me a chance. Okay, we're going there. So making obscene gestures or threats, hitting and punching, or in rare cases, even more violent acts. The term can refer either to acts committed by cyclists or by drivers. Bike rage is related to other explosive outbursts of anger, such as road rage. So there's, you know, causes that it has here. Bike rage incident can start because a cyclist, driver, or pedestrian believes that another road user, let's call them road users, I like that, was being discourteous, breaking traffic rules, or in many cases because someone felt that their safety was being compromised by the actions of another road user. That's the key point right there. Safety being compromised by actions of another road user. According to the University of Hawaii professor of psychology, Leon James, bike rage is a common occurrence and quite predictable because urban commuting causes tension, anxiety, and anger right. in drivers as well as cyclists. Montgomery claims that some cyclists hit cars using the classic U-lock bash and run tactic. That's a New York City thing, I've seen it in other cases, but I simply use my hand. It makes an awful lot of noise, by the way, and it certainly does get the attention of the person who is driving the motorized vehicle. He argues that some cyclists consider such attacks acts of driver education. Montgomery claims that the problem is that the city planners have mixed bikes and cars together in ways that offer little certainty about how each should operate and lots of chances for conflict as such cyclists feel threatened in traffic and hard done by under attack. Anyway, so that's your bike rage. So drivers attacking cyclists, that happens. We know about that. We saw this on this video, which you can see on my Bike Talk Facebook page. If you're listening and you want to watch that, it's right there. I just posted it this morning. It also, here's another one. Cyclists attacking drivers. Yes, it happens. You know, you get cut off by a driver.
You shouldn't do it.
No, absolutely not. It's bad either direction. You're not being a good ambassador in either direction if you do this. So here's an example. In Toronto in 2007, after being cut off by a driver just after morning rush in Toronto, a cyclist caught up to the car, reached inside the window, and stabbed the driver in the face and neck with a screwdriver. So, you know, I mean, that's crazy. You shouldn't do that. That makes no sense whatsoever. And then there's another one, bike rage. This is kind of funny. It doesn't just involve cyclists and drivers. It involves cyclists against cyclists attacking other cyclists. It's
no.
people, keep the peace here. Come on. This is crazy. You don't need to do this. So anyway, that's the rage situation, and it's such a deal that Wikipedia has a page on it, which I thought, you know, was kind of funny. I found all sorts of different sites on this, and here's another one from a site called MarketWatch, MarketWatch.com, and it's kind of watching the insurance industry, basically. But bicycle commuting has enjoyed huge popularity and surge in the recent years. Since 2005, bicycle commuting rates have jumped 46% nationally on average, with exponentially larger increases in many big cities, according to the League of American Bicyclists. But cars and bikes, increasingly competing with the same road space, those on both sides of the lane can turn a bit surly. That's a good word. The tension between drivers and cyclists sometimes escalates into frightening bouts of rage and even intentional damage and injuries. So, you know, everybody's just got to take a chill pill here. Hopefully, if you're the person who rides the bike, you're getting a fair amount of exercise and you're getting a fair amount of release of anxiety because you're riding the bike and you're able to let out some of that anger and frustration while you're riding your bike. But, you know, it can happen either way. The incidents are crazy. They are talking here, May of 2016, a Florida cyclist reacting to being cut off reported the following offending driver. He followed the offending driver home and threatened him with a knife, ultimately stabbing his spare tire and slamming the man's hand in a door jam. Really? Come on. It's not that important. What is important is that you handle it better. In June of 2016, a San Francisco cyclist was sentenced to probation for blocking a woman's station wagon during a citywide cycle gathering and smashing her window with his bike lock after he claims she'd hit him. Oh, gosh. In August of 2016, an Alabama motorist was charged with reckless endangerment and criminal mischief after running over a man's bike with his car after the two had been arguing about the right-of-way laws. So what are the right-of-way laws? Well, every state is a little different, but most of them are fairly close to being the same. And what it really comes down to is a bicycle in most states, and I know there probably are strange states out there like Montana, for instance, and others that are a little backwards in their ways, and not necessarily in the big cities of Montana, but definitely in the outer edges of Montana where they still are trying to fight for their 3-foot law out there. The bicycle is a vehicle. The bicycle belongs on the road. The bicycle is a mode of transportation which many people use. They use it for various reasons. It may be economical. It may be beneficial to them as far as their health and fitness goes. It may be environmental because they don't want to pollute and they want to decrease their carbon footprint. But the bicycle is out there. It's there to stay. And the people who are driving motorized vehicles need to start to learn to accept that. With the ongoing presence and increase of e-bicycles that are out there right now, and we're starting to see a lot more of that happening, especially in the bigger cities, you're going to find more bicycles on the road, not less bicycles on the road. So it's time for more education, statewide education with your local coalitions. You're right here in Connecticut, we have Bike Walk Connecticut. I'll talk a little bit about them in a little while. And then, of course, you have local organizations like right here in Mansfield. We have something called Bike Mansfield, and it's a local advocacy group which is trying very hard to become very bike friendly here in our state and be recognized nationally for it. So, there's ways that we can communicate this with people who are driving motorized vehicles, because there's a lot of people that drive motorized vehicles out there, many more than there are that ride bicycles. So it's an education process. I have a number of ideas that I would love to see on a national level and probably won't, but I do have a number of ideas which would help people who drive motorized vehicles understand a little more so what it is like to deal with this. In where I read this article, and I think it was in London, when you're training to become a bus driver in London. So you're going to be a public bus driver and you're going to be driving on the streets of London. They require them to go out and ride in traffic on bicycles before they can get their bus driver's license. And they do that so they can understand exactly what it is like to be on the other side of that wheel. And what a brilliant idea to get everybody to get out and just ride your bike in traffic someday and see what it's like. See how unnerving it can be when drivers of motorized vehicles, people who drive cars and trucks, don't give you the safe space that you need and require to be safe when you're out riding on the road. So anyway, moving on from that, drivers struggle to identify with cyclists. A fundamental problem with driver-cyclist dust-ups is that many motorists don't use bicycles. This is exactly what I was just saying. And that is according to Steve Taylor, who is a communications manager for the League of American Bicycles. When drivers get annoyed with other drivers, he says most understand that it's an isolated incident. As drivers themselves, they realize it's not proof that every motorist is a nuisance, but that national thinking goes out the window when a bike rider ticks them off. So there's an interesting piece. If drivers come across one cyclist who's a jerk, they assume all cyclists are a jerk. Well, you know what? I'm going to have to assume that all people who drive cars and trucks are jerks then, because that makes no sense. I drive my motorized vehicle with other people who drive motorized vehicles all day long, and most people are pretty good. They're pretty courteous, and they follow the laws, and they do things that are generally, straightforward. And so, to make that assumption is really a bias, and it's not a great idea. Many drivers believe that they take precedent over the road and that Cyclists are invaders, says Leon James, an author of the University of Hawaii professor specializing in road rage psychology. So once again, there's actually a Hawaiian professor who specializes in road rage psychology. Boy, I'd love to spend a few hours with him. That would be fun. So driver's education programs teach motorists the rules of the road. They fail to offer guidance about the emotional aspects of driving, he believes. Drivers aren't taught that intolerance toward cyclists is a form of hostility and may wind up thinking that they're higher than bikes in the commuting pecking order. Well, let's explore that. If you are not consuming fossil fuels, if you are doing healthy things for your body, if you are not destroying the roadways with your heavy, obtrusive vehicle, are you not on the top of the pecking order versus the other way around?
Pecking order is a false construct.
I understand that, but the point that there is a thought pattern that there might be a pecking order because you're in a motorized vehicle versus a non-motorized vehicle just really flabbergasted me.
Well, I think that we need to we need more humanity in the world right now, and the construct of pecking order, I think, is useless. Their pecking order is a construct that was created by insecure people to oppress other people. I just think pecking order, we need to deconstruct the concept of the pecking order, that mm-hmm. people need to understand that sometimes you ride in a car and sometimes you ride in a bike, and we need to learn how to get along with each other. That's what's at issue here. Yes, you can say that cyclists, we don't have as much of a carbon footprint. There is something of a carbon footprint because, you know, there are petroleum products on that bicycle. There's a carbon footprint in how those materials got together.
Sure.
Yeah. Yep. And so, and how they're manufactured, how they're delivered, and how they're maintained. There is a carbon footprint there. Of course, the carbon footprint is definitely greater for the motor vehicle. But you and I drive motor vehicles, so we can't really by right diss motor vehicles.
No.
No. So I think the pecking order construct is useless. What we really need is we need more humanization of cyclists. Who is it? Was it Dave Zabriskie who was trying to promote that?
Right. It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to look that one up. I think we talked about him a while ago. The thing you have to understand as cyclists, we don't have bumpers or barriers around us. And sometimes we have to be a little more assertive and we have to be a little more aggressive when we're riding our bikes because it's a prevention thing for us. It's to keep us from getting hurt and from, to keep the person driving the motorized vehicle from getting themselves in an altercation that could cause them a major change in their life, you know, like hitting someone and possibly hurting them or killing them. So that's really, you got to think. Again, I go back to this. It's the same thing. If you get yourself behind the wheel of a motorized vehicle or even a self-propelled vehicle like a bicycle, you need to assume a certain amount of responsibility. And that's what we're really talking about here is you must be responsible. If you're out there sharing the roadways, and whether it be on your bicycle, whether it be walking, whether it be running, it doesn't matter, whether it be driving your motorized vehicle, you do have to assume a certain level of responsibility and be smart about it. That's all. That's all I'm asking for. So there's something here. You should never seek revenge in the name of cycle justice. Okay. So if someone does you something wrong, the best thing that you can do, and I have done this, and Fran knows because she has been with me when I've done it, is I try to have a conversation with the person that is driving the vehicle if I get the chance to do it. If I am so fortunate as to be in a traffic situation as to have the situation where there's an infraction against me and then up the road, that particular vehicle gets stuck at a traffic light or at a stop sign and can't progress forward, and I have the ability to go up and have a chat with them, I will have a chat with them. And I usually started out with, can I have a few moments of your time to talk to you about bicycle law? And if they did something really bad, like cut me off and tried to hit me with their vehicle, we had an incident where Fran and I were riding home one day, and we were a mile and a half from our house, maybe at the most, and we're riding home, and apparently there was a big accident out on the main road. So there was this stream of traffic that was detoured coming by, because we never have cars near us like this, backed up, bumper to bumper. And all these cars went around us, and we had found out about it because one car had actually asked us at the intersection there at the Bedlam Four Corners, is this the right way to go? And I said, sure. And I questioned why there were so many cars. And they said, oh, there's an accident and they're rerouting us and there's no way to, I don't know where I am because I'm not from around here. So we realized that that was what was going on. So anyway, we're going down the road and every single motorist that is going by us as we're riding down the road, it's single file, I will add, was giving us lots of room when they went around, except for this one. And this one person that drove by us came in really close and buzzed me. And I got upset because, you know, everybody else was responsible. Everyone else was able to give me the space. Why did you feel that you needed to intimidate the cyclist by trying to get really close? Well, the beauty of that was, as I shouted out as the driver went by, is that I go a little bit down the road, a little bit further, I see all these brake lights and realize because there was such a large stream of traffic that they had to stop at the stop sign because there was probably 15 or 20 cars waiting to turn onto the road down below us. So I caught up with the cyclist. I rolled up to the driver's side window and I tapped on his window and he rolled his window down. And inside of that car was the person driving the car, who was male. There was a female passenger in the passenger front seat, and there were two kids in the back seat. And I had a conversation with him, and all I said to him is, what were you thinking? Everyone else gave me space, but you had to see if you could intimidate me and try to hit me when you went by. What were you thinking? And he got very defensive, and you shouldn't be on the road. That's always the first response. Well, you people shouldn't be on the road. You people. I am now a people, okay? I'm no longer a human being and a person confronting him. I'm now you people, so I am now categorized.
You're an other.
I'm an other. So he tells me that, and I said, do you understand what you just did? If you had hit me, it would have been a major problem. I could have been very hurt. You could have killed me. I said, do you know anything about vehicular homicide? Do you know anything about what would happen to you? Are you prepared to be arrested and taken to jail and taken away from your wife and your children, maybe locked up and incarcerated? Could you please just think the next time you do something like this? That's all I'm asking of you. I said, please be responsible. And he was obviously taken back and a little upset with me. And I saw his wife, I assumed, who was in the passenger seat, reach over and kind of tap him on the leg like a calming type thing. And when I saw that, I went, okay, that's enough. That discussion will continue after I leave them alone. And and if you're out there listening, you know what I'm talking about. So anyway, having that conversation is an important thing. If you get the chance to have the conversation, it's always important to have the conversation. Every single one of us as cyclists out on the road who are riding our bikes and are caring about our situations and the safety of all others, that we should all be advocates in this situation. So you want to have that conversation. And the best way to have it is as calmly as possible. If it gets aggravated, if it gets worse, if you're with more than just yourself, you have another person there, have that other person break out the cell phone, take a video of the situation, same place, same time. A different time, I should say. We had another altercation, again, a mile and a half from our house with a gentleman with a pickup truck. And he, of course it was a pickup truck. And he, And he started screaming at us, and I asked Fran to get her phone out, and she was quick enough.
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't? Oh, I thought I did. So anyway, Fran was quick enough to get her phone out and put it on video, and I also had my phone up and was holding it up because I had hit the video button on my phone, and he looked at me funny, and he pulled his phone out and shook it at me. That was a funny thing that he did. But anyway, he had a 10-year-old kid in the car with him, in the truck with him, and the little kid's like holding a small puppy, and it was just really uncomfortable for this child. His father was yelling out profanities at me, telling me how I didn't belong on the road. It was just awful. And then he proceeded to tell me that he would, when he saw me out there again the next time, he would run me over. So he threatened to kill me. So what did we do with this video? We called state police. And we, unfortunately, the state police officer was reluctant to go after this guy until I started pressing it a little bit further and said, he said, well, what do you want me to do? I said, well, I would think I would want you to at least have a conversation with him. We have his plate number. We have a description of the vehicle. And we have a video which has him threatening to kill me. Isn't that enough? And so then the police officer, resident state trooper, in a small town, was happy to go after this. The reason he was not real happy about going after the person is because when you live in a small town, like the town of Chaplin, which is where this was, you get to know everybody. And he knew who the driver was. When I gave the description of the pickup truck and I gave the license plate number, he obviously, sitting on his computer, looked it up and went, oh gosh, it's so-and-so. And now I have to go have a talk with him about this. And so anyway, come to find out that this gentleman, first of all, had a religious sticker in the back of his vehicle. So he was obviously a church-going man. And he had a child in his car, and he's spewing profanities out at me. Then he threatens to kill me. And come to find out, after posting this whole thing on Facebook, I find that he is also a member of our local volunteer fire department. So this is the person who would, and this is my best part of the story, this is the person who would have hit me, possibly killed me, been my first responder, and then been praying that I didn't die so he wouldn't go to jail.
Ouch.
Ouch. So I'll let you put that all together. Anyway, that's just a little thing about road rage, personal road rage issues. And we don't usually have them very much out here because we're kind of in the woods, and there aren't as many cars and trucks out here because we're very rural, and so we have fewer incidents. I know people who live in Hartford. I know people who live down in Fairfield County and in New Haven and busier and over in Providence and in Boston. They have this behavior happen all the time when they're riding their bikes. And it's something that needs to get changed. It needs to be broadcast to the people who are driving motorized vehicles that, you know, there are rights out there for the cyclists. And then, you know, the insurance industry is involved in this, too. So, there's a problem on both ends, and it's only going to cause more cost to a lot of different people. If the cyclist has an aggressive situation with you, let's say they pull out their U-lock and they slam it against your vehicle and do damage to your vehicle, suing a cyclist is an option. Or you can turn a comprehensive car insurance if you have it, which covers vandalism. So, you know, you have that's what you have as a right to as a driver. As a cyclist, no insurance will pay out for intentional damage you do to someone else. So that's an issue here. This is actually off an insurance page. That's why I'm reading this and seeing this. So the driver, assuming that the cyclist makes a claim against your policy, your liability insurance pays for the cyclist's injury treatment and vehicle repairs up to a limit. If your car is damaged from the incident, you may make a claim on collision coverage if you have it. Car and bicycle collide. Cyclist is at fault. The cyclist, bicycle insurance, if you have it, may help pay for repairs to your bike and your injury treatment, as well as your liability costs if you damage the driver's vehicle. If you don't have bicycle coverage, your homeowner or renter's insurance may cover your personal liability costs. Oh, gosh. I just don't know where to go with this. Why don't we just not have the altercations in the first place, and then we wouldn't have to worry about this? That sounds to me like a much, much better idea. So I'm gonna move on because there's all sorts of things on this. This is a site called MarketWatch, www.marketwatch.com, and it's all about bike rage and drivers and cyclists, and there's a whole list of things going on here. Moving on, there's another piece here. I have road rage. Why do bike riders make car drivers see red? And this is from a European site, and it's over in it looks like it's in England, and it's just, you know, this happens all over the world. This is not an unusual thing. So then I found this a site called treehugger.com. And treehugger.com is a Driving Green Since 2004 website. And the explanation here is 6 ways to defuse anti-cyclist road rage. Okay? So anti-cycling road rage is just a big drag, perpetuating the us versus them mentality between drivers and cyclists, and sometimes endangering lives. Some states have tried to legally protect cyclists from a driver's abuse, but there are a number of things that a cyclist can do to promote street peace. Good, street peace. You like that? And the best, safest ride possible. So we're going to read on here and we'll look at the tips. Number one tip, the bike, it says drive your bike. The bike, after all, is a two-wheeled vehicle. Haven't we been talking about this? And unless other laws apply, is treated as a vehicle in the eyes of the law. That's why considering yourself driving your bike instead of just riding is probably a good idea. Okay, the dot matrix puts it this way. One drives a bicycle, a scooter, or a motorcycle, not rides one. People ride in things over which they do not have control. Bicyclists, scooterists, and motorcyclists have control. They must. To call what they do as riding is disrespectful to what a two-wheeled navigator actually does. So drive your bike. Okay, good. Good point. Number two, obey the law. It's a tired old chestnut, isn't it? Motorists bend and break traffic laws systematically. Should cyclists be held to a higher standard? Yes and no. In order to not aggravate the us versus them mentality that the bikes on the road create motorists' minds, it is important for cyclists to follow the laws to the best of their ability. Salmon biking, driving your bike against the flow of traffic. And completely
Salmon biking.
Yeah, I like that. And completely breezing through stop signs or red lights are the two offenses that most make motorists see red. The road is a limited resource, and if cyclists want to share it, they need to respect the rules of the road. I agree 100%. I preach this to people. Stop at stop signs. Stop at stop lights. Signal. Pretend you are in a motorized vehicle. And just going back to number one, drive your bike. Okay, very, very simple. Number three, and in the same time, lobby for a version of the Idaho stop law in your state. The Idaho stop law, I talked about this a few weeks ago. The Idaho stop law, which has been in place since 1982, allows cyclists to yield instead of fully stop with the foot down when faced with an intersection or a stop sign. Oregon tried unsuccessfully to pass this version of the law earlier this year. The University of California's School of Health in Berkeley crunched some data, and the UC researcher Jason Megg studied the law's results and found that the year following its implementation, bicycle injuries dropped 14.5%. So let's look at the Idaho stop law. Number four is not on my list here because it's moving to another page here. So we have a couple more items here. Arm yourself with a smile and a wave. We've talked about that.
Amber does that really well.
Yes, and don't forget your finest, brightest plumage. So be seen. That's really important. So we're getting ready to wrap this thing up here, and I got a couple of things I have to go through before we can do that. I'm going to run up to upcoming events this weekend. If you want to see one of the biggest cyclocross races in the United States, it's the Grand Prix of Cross in Gloucester, Massachusetts on October 14th and 15th. My friends down at the Central Bucks Bike Club has a covered bridges ride on the 15th of the month. And moving forward on that, I'll talk a little bit more about cross season just slightly here. Brody Cross, which is October 21st in New Hartford. Belltown Cross, which is October 22nd in East Hampton. Cheshire Cross, November 4th. Newtown Team 26 Cross, November 5th. March Farms Cross, November 24th in Bethlehem, Connecticut. And Elm City Cross in New Haven on December 17th. These are all part of the Connecticut Series of Cross. You can find out more about that at www.ctseriesofcross.com, of CX.com, excuse me. And then Bike Walk Connecticut, a little shout out to them. There's on October 22nd, there's a Discover Suffield ride, which is part of a Bike Walk Connecticut event. And then their annual dinner, the Bike Walk Connecticut's annual dinner, which is Friday, November 3rd. The MC is going to be Kyone Wolf, and she is the technical producer and announcer and photographer for NPR and Colin McEnroe's show. An avid cyclist and cycling advocate, Wolf is the founder of Pedal to the Metal, an annual bike ride, which benefits BCCO, which Fran and I are both going to be on this weekend. The featured speaker will be Karen Jenkins. She's a board chair of League of American Bicyclists. I will hit this again next week so I can tell you a little bit more about it. Big one here, People's Choice Awards. For this year's honorees, we'll take cue from our members. So if you have someone out there that is a municipal employee, a public official, a citizen, advocate, or has made major contributions to making your town or all of Connecticut a better place to bike or walk, you can submit your applications. You can do it on the www.bikewalkct.org. All right. We're going to move forward here. My name is Pedalin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. Remember, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. And if you'd like to contribute or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.